Marcy Robertson loves to bake.
Yeah, when I'm in the kitchen, I can just put my headphones on. I don't have to think about anything else. And at the end, I get something delicious to eat.
She's also a sophomore at Utah State University. And this year, Robertson decided to add the uber glamorous title of resident assistant to her resume. She was inspired to take the job because of a good experience she had with a previous RA.
Often RAs are sort of framed as like an enforcer, like they're just there to make you follow the rules. But his balance of both being like just so personable, sort of like as a steadying force, while also simultaneously being that sort of authority, was just really, really cool.
But her world changed when she came back from Christmas break this year. Robertson is a transgender woman who went viral on social media, and not of her own accord.
It is hard to even put into words the feeling of knowing that millions of people have seen your face, your full name, have your email address, your home address, where you live. Then that's just public knowledge.
It all started when a woman posted on Facebook that Utah State University paired her daughter in a dorm suite with a transgender woman. Other people started to pile on. The post made its way to X, formerly known as Twitter, where the story spread like wildfire. One social media post was viewed 4.2 million times. It accused USU of allowing a transgender person to turn a, quote, safe haven for female students into a nightmare of wokeism that threatens the safety of female residents.
Even Utah Speaker of the House Mike Schultz weighed in online. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. This week on State Street, how that social media post sparked legislation nearing the finish line. This has been a rapid-fire kind of bill. 2 weeks before the session started in January, this social media post pops off about a Utah State University RA who was trans and her suite mate was very much not okay with that. 3 days into the 2025 session, Republican Representative Stephanie Grecius presented a bill to the House Business, Labor, and Commerce Committee. It bans transgender students from living in dorms that align with their gender identity on state, college, and university campuses.
So just so I'm fully understanding this, this law does not apply to private colleges in Utah, right? I'm thinking of places like BYU or Westminster here in Salt Lake.
You're right, Sean. It doesn't. Does not apply to private universities whatsoever. Representative Grecius declined to be interviewed for this episode, but during her presentations of the bill, she said it's necessary to provide greater privacy for students living on campus.
Dorms are a place where people are particularly vulnerable. This is a place where these students are living, they are sleeping, and by providing clear guidance and expectations for everyone from the onset, it'll help ensure the rights of all people are protected.
So how does the bill architect say it accomplishes that? What would this actually be changing?
The bill does a few things. First, it says in sex-designated dorms.
Those are the dorms that are all male or all female, right?
Yes. Transgender people can't live in those dorms. A transgender woman can't live in an all-female dorm, and a transgender man can't live in an all-male dorm. That gives a transgender person three options. One, live off campus. Two, live in a dorm room that matches their sex assigned at birth. Or the third option, a gender-neutral dorm.
Help me understand, what is a gender-neutral dorm? How would that work in practice?
This is how Grecius explained that.
The bill makes clear that higher education institutions with on-campus housing may designate gender-neutral housing units or dorms as long as students who are assigned to those have requested it.
You would have to opt in to this gender-neutral option, but here's the gist of it from Grecius.
What the gender-neutral option does is it gives them a third designation that they can mix in with those other co-ed houses. And those are not specifically called out. They're not labeled. They're not marked. We don't want to marginalize the community any more than they already feel. So we don't want to accidentally out someone by putting a big label on it. And I know there's a lot of sensitive feelings surrounding this, but they can still be mixed into those same areas where they have male housing, female housing, and then just an alternative. And there's nothing keeping someone whose identity aligns with their biological sex out of those housing units also. So you can have a trans woman in with three biological females, and that would be just fine under that gender-neutral option.
Okay. Grecius argues the bill includes some kind of housing for trans students, but what if they wanted to live in a dorm that corresponds with their gender identity? Could they do that at all?
No, there's no exceptions to the law. Even if a transgender person has had gender-affirming surgery and changed their birth certificate.
So it's cut and dry on who's allowed to live where, but I don't want to gloss over the personal aspect to this too. All of this started with one dorm assignment that went viral.
First, we're taking a quick break. Stay with us.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. I mentioned this all started with a social media post. Remind us what that was all about.
Well, I gotta say, Grecius says the bill was not in response to the social media post. It at least elevated the issue, though. That's undeniable. But here's the TLDR. The post was initially made by Cheryl Saltzman, the mom of Marcy's suitemate. She expressed concern about her daughter Avery Saltzman living in the same dorm room as Marcy without Avery's consent. Avery and Marcy lived in separate rooms but shared a bathroom in common areas. Cheryl's post caught the attention of conservatives on other platforms, including X, formerly known as Twitter. And that's where it really blew up. The post included a picture of Marcy. Her name, where she lived on campus, and her school email was visible in a photo. The kids these days, Sean, call that being doxxed. But Avery transferred out of that room into a different one.
And I feel like that's where most of these stories would end, is the person moves out. I mean, I had a good friend in college whose roommate literally moved out in the middle of the night. Usually it doesn't end up in front of the state legislature.
But this story did. To learn more about Avery's experience and how it led to the bill, we reached out to her mom, Cheryl Saltzman. We had some delays in scheduling the conversation, so State Street executive producer Caroline Ballard ended up jumping into the host seat.
Tell me a little bit about your daughter, Avery. What's she like?
She worked really hard in high school, and she actually worked on and received her pharmacy tech certificate in high school. So she's working, and it's her first year in college. She's my oldest, so she's just a great example to her sisters. She's the best.
The reason why we're here today. Your daughter was placed in a suite with a trans RA. Avery raised her hand, said she was uncomfortable with the living situation, and was assigned another room. What was your goal in writing your post on Facebook about this?
I certainly had no idea that it would explode in the way it did. There was no consent. There was no forewarning. She messaged me. She said, I think that a man is moving into my dorm. And I just thought she must be mistaken because there's no way that the college would do that. When she came back from Christmas to start the new semester, it was verified through one of her roommates. I just kind of went in this mode. Number one, let's get her out and into a better situation, a safe space. But then I just was in shock, and I almost immediately went on to Facebook. I felt like people should know. You sign up for a girl's designated dorm suite. So it is completely just irresponsible of the school to place a man in there. And here's the problem. If you are uncomfortable with it, then you have to move out of your home that you have made 4 months you may not have resources to move out. You may not have a family that's just able to drop everything and help you get out and may not want to deal with it. And honestly, it is scary. Am I going to be targeted now? He knows who I am. Everyone's going to think I'm a bigot and a transphobe and whatever else, you know, like, and that is such a horrible situation to have put these girls in.
The school did move Avery to a new living situation. Why is legislation necessary here?
We cannot just trust these institutions to just do the right thing for their female students. The response from the college, or really lack of response from the college, has been stunning. I went to freshman orientation before I put my daughter in the school, which school, by the way, is my alma mater, and really truly believed it was a more conservative choice. And it was just was a huge breach of trust and a criticism I've gotten from leftist opposition is that you got her out. Why couldn't you just leave it at that? Why do you have to be mean? Well, now, all over the state, when a girl and parents sign up for a girl space, there's now laws that protect them.
What did you think of the huge response that this post got online?
This was a shockwave throughout the whole country. And I will stand by this so passionately that it is every woman's right to choose when and if she decides to live with a man. It should be her choice. I have no problem with the way any adult wants to live their life. And I support the gender inclusive housing that they have online, which to be honest with you, makes this whole situation so much worse, right? Because there is an option for these men who understandably, like, I have empathy for them and understand why they would not feel comfortable in a men's dorm. So in that spirit of empathy, that I can see how that would be uncomfortable for them. I am appalled at the lack of empathy that he would have, that his mother would have, that anyone in his community that is defending this would have to not allow that for these girls. This is just common sense. Like, women, especially these young women, first leaving their home, how vulnerable you are. Doesn't take very much imagination to see how this could be extremely exploited very easily by someone who does not have good intentions, right? So I am not the only one shocked by this. And it is proved by the millions of people that have weighed in. And it wasn't until that huge wave of support that the trans activists and the bullies and the scary messages filled the inbox and the threats and the death threats and all of this came.
In listening with Marcy the RA and now speaking with you, both of you expressed how after this tweet went viral that there was a lot of hate directed your way. You were very visible, and death threats.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some similar experiences happening as people. How do you think about that? That so much has been unleashed from this.
This is a hard one for me. I don't know what he's gotten. His whole speech at the Senate was that he was a victim. And I'm not going to tell you that he's lying. However, my rebuttal, which maybe doesn't sound very empathetic, however, I would argue it's fair. If he's uncomfortable, he could move into the gender inclusive, arguably the perfect, most comfortable place that he could choose to be. And he's not scared enough to move. And he is allowed to do that. Just like my daughter was allowed to move when she was uncomfortable. He is certainly a victim by anyone who made him feel like he was entitled to infringe upon the rights of the girls in that female space. And that's unfortunate because it never should have been taken that far to where we have a community now feeling their housing rights for trans are being restricted. That was the Deseret News headline. Well, no, female rights for their female spaces is we're trying to protect that. And he's a victim of this. He really is. But that cannot allow you to victimize girls.
That was Cheryl Saltzman.
But Marcy had a different take on the situation.
She did. So I spoke with Marcy about the incident, her going viral, and the legislation.
I personally was never notified of her discomfort. She did go straight to my supervisor, who handled it. It was at the beginning of the semester. It was before it had even started. And I just was told, yeah, one of your roommates is moving out. So there'll be an empty room. You have fewer people to worry about as far as the residents you're in charge of. And I didn't really think anything of it. I bear no ill will. If you're not comfortable living with me, that's fine. I'm so glad that she was able to get a room even in the same building close by and not sort of break her routine. So in my eyes, that's problem solved. It really feels wholly unwarranted to then go and insist that this must be prevented from even potentially happening.
The suite mate, you never heard from her specifically that she was uncomfortable living with you. How did you find out?
I did not find out the specific reason that she moved out until I saw the tweet. So she moved out on Saturday. On Sunday night, I started getting anonymous hate emails to my work email. And the next morning, I had received a few more, and one of them mentioned X. And that pointed me towards looking on Twitter or X. And I found the tweet from Eric Moutsos. And that's how I found out that she had moved out because she was uncomfortable.
What transpired from there?
I was so fearful. It is hard to even put into words the feeling of knowing that millions of people have seen your face, your full name, have your email address, your home address, where you live. The initial reaction from the university, they kicked into gear. There, the Title IX office reached out and was doing their response. I met with the head of residence life and the head of student affairs. I had to talk to campus police about safety, and they assured me that they would like increase security and patrols. There are extra cameras. There are still extra cameras and extra patrols at the building. And at the very same time, this was the first day of the semester. This is the first day of me going to like half my new classes. It was surreal.
So you spoke at the Senate committee hearing when this bill was up for consideration. And I gotta say, it was a pretty striking scene. The first person to testify in favor of the bill was your former suite mate. And you sat right next to her. How did you feel testifying and sitting next to her during committee?
Yeah, I mean, not only was I sitting next to her as she gave her speech, but then her mother replaced her. So it's the daughter and the mother. And yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's a striking scene. The sort of the funny thing about it is I have never personally interacted with her for more than a few words. I have not had a conversation with her. I do not know her. So to me, it was my sort of thought process was, I need to be brave in this situation. Immediately after, I just all but blacked out. Like I can't remember getting up or walking over and sitting back down. I know my brother hugged me. But 5-10 minutes after that, I couldn't hear anything. I couldn't really pay attention.
What do you think this bill is trying to solve?
The bill ostensibly is for privacy, and in debates it's come out, it's they're concerned with the comfort of students. And if you're concerned for the comfort of students, if students aren't comfortable housing with transgender students, if you hide the problem, which is in my eyes what this is doing, it's counterproductive to the sort of progress that we've been trying to make as far as just simply being integrated into society. The average trans person, at least myself and people I know, we don't want to be relegated to our own spaces. Like, you're just trying to live your life. The cynical answer is that it's sating constituents' desire to see anti-trans legislation enacted. That's sort of my political analysis of it. That's why they're passing this, is because they have to be seen as doing something about this invented problem, this wedge issue. Having watched the House floor debates, the committee hearings, I attended the Senate hearing. Even those in favor of the bill, that spoke in favor of the bill, do not bear ill will towards trans people, but they support it nonetheless. So it's a really odd situation where the political answer is that it's to satisfy constituents, but those very constituents that are supporting it don't actually bear the ill will and sort of align with the actual intent of the legislation, which is to exclude trans people.
Have any lawmakers that were sponsors of the bill or supporters of the bill talked to you about it at all or seek out any of your input?
Nope. I have not heard from any sponsors, anyone in the majority caucus in either the House or the Senate.
I do want to ask, has this whole situation made you want to leave Utah?
I would be lying if I didn't say that I've considered it, but I personally am of the persuasion that it is important for those queer people that can stay to stay. Being able to up and leave and move is a bit of a privileged position to be in. I don't want to make people who can't leave feel abandoned. I think that there's value to having visibly queer people, even in areas, spaces where they are not as welcome.
That was USU student and RA Marcy Robertson.
This is the fourth year in a row Utah lawmakers have taken up legislation that directly impacts transgender Utahns.
And I've covered those stories 3 out of the 4 years.
Feels like a little bit of deja vu. Same story, just different details every year. Remind us of the laws passed during this time frame.
Ooh, yes. 2022. The legislature passed a law banning transgender girls from participating in school sports.
Boys are simply built different than girls, and it's not fair to have them compete whether they call them trans females or not.
Literally in the final hours of the session. I remember that and all the fallout that came afterward.
Sean, it was drama.
Out of nowhere, getting a complete ban that nobody's talked to me about is incredibly disappointing. So yeah, I'll veto this.
Governor Spencer Cox did veto the bill. Then the legislature overturned his veto and a court blocked it from going into effect. Fast forward to 2023. Our first session together.
We were just so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Lawmakers banned gender-affirming healthcare for transgender minors, like top surgery and hormone therapy.
The fact is that these novel and irreversible procedures lack sufficient long-term research. But still, our country is witnessing a radical and dangerous push for children to enter this version of healthcare.
They got that across the finish line within the first 2 weeks of the session. Big push.
Governor Cox did not veto that one. It is, in effect, no court challenges. Next, 2024. Lawmakers banned transgender people from using state-owned bathrooms and locker rooms that align with their gender identity. This applied to public schools, too.
the school can set up and must set up a privacy plan. And that privacy plan is open, as the title suggests, for privacy for everyone, for anti-bullying.
It will immediately tell everyone at their school that they're trans, and in a red state like Utah, that can be really dangerous.
The governor signed that one, no legal challenge.
And we've done episodes on all of them, if you're curious to go back and listen. So now we're here in 2025. It's important to mention that there are a few other pieces of legislation this session that address trans people. There's a bill that bans the state from providing gender-affirming care for trans adult inmates. That same bill also restricts where trans youth inmates can live while in state custody. That's passed the House and is waiting consideration in the Senate. Another bill deals with LGBTQ+ children involved in the foster care system. As you mentioned earlier, you've followed a lot of legislation that impacts trans people over the years. So what's the vibe been like in 2025?
Yeah, the trans dorm measure, the mood was tense. You had Marcy and Avery, but they weren't the only ones to testify. People flooded the committee rooms to have their voices heard on the topic. It kind of resembled a mosh pit trying to get into the room before all the seats were filled. Those opposed lined the walls to speak during public comment. I vividly remember when the committee chair said they were going to limit public comment because of time. A person pointed to the opposition line and shouted to lawmakers, "Look at all of this pain."
Wow. A lot of public comment this year up on the Hill. We heard about unions last week, and now this. So people are turning out.
It shows that the legislature is taking up issues people have big feelings about, Sean.
I want to zoom out real quick. This is tapping into a bigger national conversation about trans rights. Last week, President Trump signed an executive order banning trans girls from participating in sports anywhere that receives federal funds. Before that was a ban on gender-affirming care. And the first thing he did was sign an executive order stating the U.S. only recognizes two genders, biological male and biological female.
Lawmakers are still working through some details, but the bill is expected to pass the legislature and head to the governor. That does it for this episode of State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter for the weekly recap of everything that went down at the Ledge.
The State Street team behind the scenes makes this show happen. Shout out to our digital team, Jim Hill, Raquel Davis, and Eleanor Gomberg.
Stellar audio production work is whipped up by Elaine Clark and David Childs.
Our executive producer and the engine that keeps the train moving is Caroline Ballard.
See you next week.
I feel like a dog right now, like itching behind my ear.
Like really aggressive. Honestly, the first thing that ran through my head is like the jangle of a dog's collar as they're like scratching their neck. When you,
I'm gonna take off these earrings. Take them off. They're gonna clank and clack anyway. They're cute earrings, though. Everybody should compliment them. Thank you.
From KUER.